Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
This is Graymere, isn't it? What a beautiful auditorium. Rick, I enjoyed very much seeing your time lapse of all of this being remodeled. It was quite interesting. But what a pleasure it is to be here tonight and to have an opportunity to talk a little bit about the work that continues to go on in India. I think it's amazing that you as a congregation have continued through so many years with this work. Quite often a congregation will begin with a mission point and then something else will come along and they'll drop that. But I think much of the success that has gone on in India is a result of the fact that you have continued to stay with it and are doing that, as I understand, even into the future. Graymere has been a great influence in the work in India, and I am truly grateful that you as a congregation and the elders have allowed me to be a part of that for a good many years. And I was especially happy to see Dr. Willie Robinson here tonight because he was the one who really gave impetus to begin this work and has continued to be interested in it and support it. I was also happy to see my cousin Linda and Jackie Hill and Jackie's sister Judy, who've all been to India and continue to be a part of that as well. But let me just share a little bit with you about this last visit that we made. And by the way, I am looking forward to seeing Andrew and Matt sometime later in the year on a trip to India. You're familiar with this passage, and I think it does exemplify what Graymere has used as a model, and that is being willing to send the gospel to other places, not only to India, but to other places. But it takes a congregation who's willing to support a work and stay with it. And that, of course, you have done. I think we're all aware of the fact that India is the second most populated country in the world. And that's rather amazing when you stop and realize that there's something, and this is according to the last Indian census, something over a billion people, 1.31 billion people. I really can't fathom that other than to say it's some four times the population of our own country. And then when you realize how small it is compared to this country, four times the population, about half the size land mass. I do remember one of the Indian brethren coming to visit several years ago, and as coming from the airport, he said, "Where are the people?" And compared to what you find in India, we are pretty sparse at times. There's been a lot of talk about the fact that eventually India will surpass China, that mass, large country, but will surpass them in population. And right now, the prediction is it would be somewhere around 2022. So it is a continually growing population. And if I can work this, there we go. With that population of over a billion people, what we're faced with is the fact that 50.5% of the population, and this is according to Indian statistics, but something over 80% of the population are Hindu, which is there's no other way to say it, but it's an idolatrous country. And you see idols such as this elephant-headed god all over India. While there's 80% Hindu, 13% are said to be of the Muslim religion. You're probably aware of the fact that Pakistan came into existence as a result of the difference in the Muslim population. They moved them to a portion of India, cut that off from India, called it Pakistan, and the Muslims moved there. But many of them still live in what we speak of as India. But when you think of 80% Hindu, 13% Muslim, and then in the broadest sense of the term, some 2.3% Christians, So we do have our work cut out for us. But 2% of a billion people is still a large population. India is, continues to be, a land of opportunity. I'm reminded of the shoe salesman that was sent to darkest Africa on one occasion. And he wrote back to the company and said, "There's no use in being here. Nobody wears shoes." A second salesman came back and said, "Opportunity's unlimited. Nobody wears shoes." And the opportunities for us in India to take the gospel continue to be really outstanding. We work primarily in the South. Many times, I think for most of us, our point of contact is primarily Chennai. We work in two or three states here in the South, Andhra Pradesh to the north, Karnataka, Goa, and then in Tamil Nadu. So primarily that's the area that we're working in. When we first got there on this particular trip, we went down to Pondicherry. Pondicherry is a section of the country that was settled by the French, and it still has a large influence there. Single Ryan is a gospel preacher that Graymere helps, supports. And I'm sure we understand when we're talking about supporting a preacher, we're really talking about supporting the gospel. The preacher is nothing more than the earthen vessel to carry it, but we're trying to support the gospel. And Single Ryan is one that is in Pondicherry. Sadly, he lost his wife. She died maybe a year ago now, and it's been very hard on him. But after that happened, Brother Peter Solomon set up a satellite Bible school in Pondicherry, and Brother Single Ryan has been teaching that. And this was the graduation day. They teach them basic Bible principles, and these people were getting a diploma after a year's study. Then just the distance from Chennai down south to Pondicherry. And we also, on this trip, are going to go over to Arakonam, which is an excellent work there also. But then we went back to this Sunday morning, go back to Chennai, where Brother Peter Solomon, that you all have met, I'm sure. And it's amazing to think about this congregation, which has developed into the largest congregation of our brethren in India. Andrew has preached here, Jonathan has, and others. And it's always a joy to be there with these brethren. 1,000+ on a Sunday morning, people outside of most of the doors that cannot get in. And the amazing thing about it is all of this started in Peter Solomon's home. It's a very small little dwelling with he and his wife and two daughters. And then he began to convert others, and they added a little lean-to onto their house and had no walls, but the church met there for a number of years. And then they moved down the street and built a larger building, and then another one, and now they have this congregation, and it's amazing. And they have several services on Sunday at that in different dialects. But a great first congregation, I think, in India that had elders also. After that, we moved over to the YMCA. This is Brother Dennis Widener, who was an elder of the church at Foothills in near Searcy, Arkansas. We traveled together on this particular trip. So after leaving the Chennai congregation, we went over here to the YMCA, had a service there that same Sunday. After that, we went to a new congregation where Emmanuel is preaching, and we had a service there. And then we went to still another congregation at another YMCA on that same day. Then that night, Sunday night, the lectureship began. And this is Brother David Sagayam, one of the teachers at the National Bible College, probably has converted more people than anybody I know or have known. Just a great personal worker, great encourager to preachers as well. Andrew, where do I need to be pointing this? Just up here, okay. This is Jeva Kumar, another preacher that Graymere supports, doing an outstanding job. I know we don't have time to talk in detail about all of these men, but I wanted you to see some of the men that you are continuing to help. And that was the lectureship that began Sunday night, went on over into Monday. the lectureship that takes place each year at the National Bible College was meeting in this building on Monday. And Brother Solomon, quite a visionary, he puts the lectureship on each year. And preachers from various parts of India, elders, various other members. So a good work that's going on. And again, Graymere primarily is the supporter of the National Bible College there. Several of us got to preach there, some of us from the States. This man is from Burma, Myanmar. He also is on the faculty of the college. He had a lecture during that time. Then the next day, we began a four-day journey to several congregations, seven of them, in fact, in the state of Andhra Pradesh. And this is in Tripathi, where Vijay Kumar preaches, that I mentioned a moment ago. The interesting thing about this city is it has the largest, at least most visited, Hindu congregation in the world. It is said, they told me, that there are 150,000 people who visit this temple every day. I thought they were exaggerating. But I'd known about it for several years, never had been there, but it's high up in this hills or mountains. And so we had time to go up there. First of all, you have to go through a gate here with your car. You get out of the car. They search it, make sure you don't have any Bibles or, I guess, explosives. And you walk ahead, and then you can get back in your car and start up the mountain. And you couldn't drive very fast, but it took us 45 minutes to get to the top. And I mention that simply to say that it's a long distance. And one of the things that's a highlight of a Hindu's life is to go to this temple. And they walk along the road, but there are many more who are taking an inward path, some 32,000 steps. They make this journey barefooted to get to the top to visit the idol that's in this particular temple. So you see hundreds and hundreds of people doing this as you're on the way. And you'll notice all of these people, as we were getting near to the top, are barefooted. And we are at the top now. We're walking along. To the left, there was a big grass area where many of them were lying there asleep. It's kind of like going to Baskin Robbins. There's so many of them there, you have to get a number. And when your number comes up, then you can go in. If you pay some $2,000, you can get at the head of the line. But there are literally thousands of people up there. But still, at this point, it was hard for me to believe that there were as many. But after we got to the top, suddenly it dawned on me, like never before, what Ephesus in Paul's day must have been like. In Ephesus, there was the great temple to Diana. There were the silversmith who made shrines to Diana and sold them to the people. And as you get to the top of this mountain and you begin to walk in here, you can't help but remember that story. It's more vivid in my mind than it's ever been. And you remember Demetrius was gathering the silversmith together, and he talked about how Paul had persuaded and turned away many people, saying that they are not gods which are made with hands. And that's exactly what you find in this temple. And he talked about how it was endangering their trade. Well, they were, say, making little shrines to this goddess, Diana. Well, when you get up to this mountaintop, to these idol worshipers, it's just like Ephesus. And they have their big temple here, and then there are these little booths all along the way where you can buy idols or pictures of it or various other kinds of shrines. And again, I thought about Paul when he was in Athens. And he said he saw the idol to the unknown God. But he said, I perceive that you're very religious. I'm telling you, these Hindu people are very religious. But they don't know the true and living God. But they are very religious people. And the farther we walked, the more people we began to see. And the more that we found whose heads had been shaven like this man's. And if you could see many of them sitting around. We kept walking. We kept seeing more people. The farther we went, the more we saw. There was one area where they had a place where the people could buy coconuts. and they would break them on this marble and pour out the milk somehow to the idol, to the god. But many of them were doing that. And then there were more people. And I began to think 150,000 doesn't do it justice. There must have been more than that. But I've never seen so many people in one place. And it's like that every day. This is as far as Dennis and I could go. The temple was behind us, but we could see it. I asked, why all of these clothes hanging here? And there are baths there that many of them will go into before they go into the temple to see the idol. This is the entrance to the temple, and the temple here, obviously I didn't make that picture, but it's a golden covered temple to this god. And inside, opulence, and you see these people at the bottom, men, women, young ladies, babies, having their heads shaved, and they use the hair, the Hindus do, to sell for wigs, show horse tails. They make millions of dollars off of it. But one of the things the Hindus do is to have their head shaved. That's part of the ritual when they get there. This is the idol. And when they get there, they may have been waiting days. They have apartments where some of the people can stay, waiting for their turn. And they're allowed 1 minute. Once you get here, you can stand in front of it for 1 minute. And you'll notice the eyes of the idol have been covered over. And what they explained to me was that the idol might look into the eyes of someone who is unworthy and in some way might be saved. So they cover even its eyes, but they can stand here for a minute and then must move on. But as you come out, again, these are literally silver. I couldn't help but think of Demetrius and the silversmith of Ephesus, and they're selling these shrines to the people. Here are some of one little shop where you can buy a replica, various things of this idol. It's sad. It's amazing to see their enthusiasm, their dedication to this, but 150,000 people a day gather for that. I guess I shouldn't say it, but I look at my own life sometime and the lives of my brethren. You know, Wednesday night, how many of us come together, often on Sunday night, and you got people worshiping a dumb man-made idol, and they're so dedicated to it, they'll walk barefooted 3,200 steps and bow down before it. But they are religious. That night, we had an opportunity to be with some of the brethren there and had a worship service in that same city. And I just included this picture because someone at the little congregation there in Mount Pleasant, Mount Julia, where I preach some now, had given me $1,000. And they wanted it to go to a school where they are teaching young girls how to sew, give them a trade. And they had named the school, I think I'd mentioned this before, but they were kind, and they had named the sewing school, the Johnny Vaughn, after my son who died, a sewing center. And someone had given a lot of money, and I just wanted them to know they got the money that was passed on to them. After that, the next day, we went to a remote village where another preacher that Graymere helps, named Elisha, is working. And this is an interesting place. This is Elisha. He's Jabba Kumar's, Vijay Kumar's brother. But he's in the village. This is his family. They're inside of their house. He gave land for a building. But the reason they had to do this, I am punching it. There it goes. There it went. They don't have a building like many other places. And it's so good that you as a congregation are helping Jabba Kumar acquire a building. They really need it. When they're driven time after time from one place to another, and sometimes with rods and just being mean to the Christians. You know, I read the other day that India is the 10th most dangerous place in the world for Christians now. And so our brethren have many times had to move from one place to another. But they don't have a building here either. And they had gathered some saris and were letting me pass some of those out. But they said, come down this path with us. And we walked down this dirt road a ways and came to this little church building that was abandoned. And they said, we were meeting in that abandoned church building, but the denominational group that owned it did not want them meeting there, and so they have padlocked the building. So even though they don't use it, they don't want our brethren using it, and they just locked it up. So they don't have a place to meet now. So the brethren there themselves, and Dr. Robinson, by the way, has helped with this work, they're sacrificing to try to build a building for themselves. And this is a very poor area. You just, this is one of the houses across the street, the kind of dwellings they have in this remote village. But they're doing what they can, and they're keeping a record of what each person is giving. Now, I don't know whether you can see the figures there. It looks large, but it amounts anything from $7 to $14. But that's what they can do. They're very poor laborers, and they're trying to build a building here, and they're doing it the best they can. So they've gotten this far along. Maybe someday they'll be able to finish that one. We walked down the road after we had a service there and to this farm, and the man who lives here is not a Christian, but he lets them use a trough for his animals to drink from. And a man and his wife wanted to be baptized that day. And I do want to emphasize the fact that when you see baptisms like this in some of our reports, it's because the local preachers and the brethren are teaching these people. They were already taught before we ever got there. I really admire the gospel preachers that we are supporting. But they wanted to be baptized, and there was this large area that the farmer let them use for baptism. Man and his wife there. Then, like us, they like to have their dinners, and this was literally a dinner on the ground. They'd gone back up to the preacher's house, and talk about dinner on the ground. It's on the ground. After that, we went to a place called Coda, where another preacher named N. James is working. It looks like we're in a building. We're not. We're outside, and they've just put up some curtains around there to have a place out of the sun and so forth. But we had a service there with N. James. There were several that wanted to be baptized, those young ladies and then this man. And so we had several baptisms there. And again, it's the result of the work that N. James is doing. So when we're supporting these people, they're doing good work. Now, I didn't know whether to try to show this or not, but when we got back to still another congregation where Vijay Kumar preaches, he had worked up a slide presentation of it includes me, but it's really talking about Graymere, what Graymere has done over the years, and how many years Graymere has sent people there. 35 times we have visited here. When we first started, I'm trying to change that. When we first started, they had nothing, and they've done most of it themselves. And one of the things that we were able to do was introduce these elders from the Foothills congregation, and he was showing that. And they have become very involved in the India work as well, as a result of the influence of Graymere. Also, he had Linda and Jackie pictured on that, and they have done a lot of work to help these brethren over there. The Barry's Chapel congregation and Jackie have helped the lepers. It's pitiful to see these lepers. But there's a program they have for children of the lepers after school, and they teach them and they feed them. And so that's been a real asset to the work there. And Linda, through Healing Hands, has done a lot to provide wells in many places around. That's great benefit to have fresh water. And I don't know, I didn't ask Brother Doug Moss if I could do this, but he has quietly for a number of years given support to the work, and they had that on. I don't know how they got Doug's picture, but they had that in this slide presentation, and there are five village preachers that are being blessed by his generosity in that work. These are three of them that I have met with and talked to them about their work. So we do try to keep up with these people and find out what's going on and how they're doing and what their needs may be. But these are very dedicated men that have very little to live on. From there, we went to another city called Gudar that Graymere also helps. So we were down at Tripati, where the temple is. We're on our way north. We're going to stop at Gudar. This is Sharish, who's preaching there now. His father was the preacher, and he died, and Sharish is carrying on the work there in Gudar. You can always tell how many people are going to be in the auditorium when you get there by how many shoes are outside. And I've often wondered, how do they find their own shoes when it's through? But the preacher preaches barefooted, and all the brethren are barefooted when they go in. But they had just gotten a PowerPoint projector, and were using it on that occasion. So we had a service with them. Some of the children sang some what we would call vacation Bible school songs for us while we were there. And I got my traditional banana. I think I told you, years ago they invited us to come eat, and I tell you the truth, I just didn't want to eat. I didn't know how clean it was. You know, I hate to put it that way. I just didn't want to get sick. I saw some bananas. I said, oh, I love bananas. So now everywhere I go, I eat bananas. They think I love bananas. I wouldn't care if I never saw another banana. But I eat them in India. So we're on our way now to Nellore. You see these big trucks like that all along the way. This is Mohan. He's a good preacher there. His wife is the one that has the sewing center and has converted, close to 24 women just by teaching them to sew and then having a Bible class afterwards. And so she's done a great work. But they, too, are in a pitiful situation as far as a place to meet for worship. This has got a tin roof and no insulation, hot as fire. A lot of the people are sitting outside. But Prasanth, the preacher's wife, Mohan's wife, went online and learned how to cook southern fried chicken. So I eat something beside bananas there. She's a sweet lady. The daughter there beside her, by the way, is the young lady that we mentioned a few years ago had been kidnapped. And she was gone for several days. And finally, they had to bribe the police to find her and bring her back. And it was a traumatic time, therefore, but she's doing well now. From there, we went out to another village. I had never been here before. Just a thatched roof kind of building. Dennis and I had the opportunity to go there. Dennis supports, the Foothills Brethren support this work. But it's just thrilling to go here and to the dedication these people and the desire they have. They bring their Bibles with them. They listen. They take notes. They can turn to the Scriptures as fast as anybody you can imagine many times. But they don't have anywhere to meet. They're just, when it rains, they do try to go into the preacher's house, very small little place, very humble. But most of the time they're under that's true. But I wanted to include this man in the pink shirt's picture. He was a denominational preacher and had a congregation. And Vijay Kumar taught him, converted him. And so he began to preach the truth and was converting the people of that denominational group. And so those who were in charge made him leave. And so that's why they meet in that little thatched roof place. But he's such a good man. He's crippled. But he's such a good man, and they've done such good work in the community that the man who's the head of the community gave them a lot. So they have a place now where eventually, hopefully, they can have a permanent place to meet also. From there, we're going to go south again down to Sulipet, which is their Cape Canaveral, where they have the Rocket Center. These brethren finally did get a church building. They had been driven out of place 4 different times, but now they have a place where they can meet. Dhanajaya is the preacher there. He's an upper-class Hindu, was. His family disowned him for a while. He has converted his father, but not his mother. But he's doing a good work. And he's another one that Graymere supports. And this is the new children's home that they have. And this is primarily due to the Foothills congregation. One of the elders there raised about $100,000 to build this. And the church meets on one level. There's a meeting area. Originally, the boys were going to be on the top floor, the girls on the second floor. The government said, no, you can't do that. You have to have separate places for them. So they do have another building, but they're just beginning to fill this up now. But it is really kind of, for them, a state of the art. This is the building where the girls are living, and inside of that. These are all going to be orphans that are here. This is inside the building. We had a service there, just a weekday service, but a good number came out for that. These are some of the children that are there now. They're going to add 30 more children within the next few months. Little boy came up and gave me a box of candy. It was just kind of touching. From Sulipet, we're going to go back down now to Chennai. Now it's Sunday morning. That was Saturday. Sunday morning, we got up. And Dennis went one way, and I was going to go out to visit Jaba Kumar. Jaba Kumar has been here a couple of times, and it's his work that you are supporting to help build the church building. I'm so thankful you're doing that. He's worthy. The brethren there are worthy. But I rode in a little three-wheeler like that. It took me 45 minutes. This was early Sunday morning to get out to the place where they're meeting right now in a rented hall. You see so many really pitiful places where people are living as you travel along the way. But when I got there, some of the teenage girls were preparing the communion for that Sunday morning worship. And Jaba Kumar... Jaba is really an outstanding preacher, and he's kind of Peter Solomon's right-hand man, and a good work, worthy to help. Right now, they're meeting in this rented hall. There is a Pentecostal group that also meets in this general area, not at the same time. They don't meet until much later in the day. But they set up loudspeakers outside of this little auditorium. And they blare music as loud as they can into the building here just to disrupt the Christians meeting, the members of the church meeting there to worship. So it's another reason they need to move and find somewhere where they can worship in peace. This is the lot. I know you can't tell a lot about it, but it's an excellent piece of land. It's already been purchased, as I'm sure you know. It's a corner lot. There's a concrete road on two sides, and it's just about a block off the main highway. So it's really a good location. It's a growing area, and Jaba Kumar and the brethren there will continue to build a tremendous congregation. And it's wonderful that they're going to have, because of you and some others, have a place where they can meet. They really need it and deserve it. But that is the corner lot. I wish I had a better picture. Things had changed. I went out there very early in the morning. Wasn't much traffic, but going back after worship, and I just wanted to point out to you the lady on the man on, and the wife on the motor scooter. And if you'll notice in her arms, she's sitting side saddle. I don't know. She doesn't seem to be holding on to anything, but she's holding a child. And I've wondered so many times how in the world they keep from wrecking and killing each other. But sometimes you'll see three or four on a scooter or a motorbike. Anyway, that was just right in front of me, carrying that baby like that. After we got back into town, we went to another YMCA building, had another service that Sunday morning. These brethren really are dedicated. The next day, which was Monday, we went over to Arakonam, where David Sagayam is. And just strange. I'd never seen this before. I wish Tony Sowell were here tonight. This is a hearse. And you see the casket on the back of it. This is the church building. You talk about having a place to meet. These brethren, in Arakonam built this themselves. Nobody ever gave them any help. It took them years and years, but they finally have a nice church building in which to meet and have a large congregation there now. Their baptistry is outside, as is true with most places, and you notice the scripture there right over the baptistry. Davis Agayam, we supported him for a number of years, but now the Barry's Chapel congregation is, but we still work with him. And he teaches at the Bible College. He also has some Bible colleges in addition. He has preacher training schools, does more personal work than anybody I've ever known. He's a mentor to many of the younger preachers, and really a great man. He's baptized, I'm sure, into the thousands. And he follows up with them. Even though India is changing rapidly, the roads are better, transportation is better, communication, you still see the ox carts mixed in with it all as you travel along. Not as much as you used to, but still that's part of it. David Sagayam took us out to some of the rural areas, village congregations. This is one, a thatched roof little building. And Titus, I think, is the man's name, his wife and daughter who worship here, has a congregation. They are collecting. They need a building. And they're collecting building materials. They have brick and rock. And eventually, they hope to have enough where they can have a permanent place to meet also. And I know some brethren say, well, we don't need to be building church buildings. It's a whole different situation in India because they're run out from place to place, and it gets dangerous at times. They really need some permanent places. This is Titus baptizing. David Sagayam there with him. This is another. Joshua is another one. He's in a place called Goldfield that we're able to help part of that with money that's donated. This is another of the village preachers. Another of the village preachers. And I still remember something Charles Thigpen said years ago. He said, these people don't know they're not supposed to go out and convert people because they do it constantly. Another of the preachers. This is one of the preacher training schools that Brother David Sagayam has. And I wanted to show you this little church building. We do support the preacher there a little bit by contributions, but it's a congregation. This is the preacher and his wife. It's up on a hill, and that picture really doesn't do justice to the steepness of that dirt road. And I'm showing you that just to say the brethren have to come up that hill, up that road to get to the place of worship. And I happened to be speaking here, and all of a sudden I saw in the back coming in a lady who had climbed that hill. I don't know how she did it. And she got to the top step here on the porch of the building and just sat down for a good while. And then she crawled on her hands and knees into the building. She wanted to come. And again, I thought about how some of us are sometimes, if you know, any excuse we miss. But that lady wanted to come, and she crawled into the church building and finally was able to sit down there for the service. I'm saying this to just, I want to say as strongly as I can, they're worthy. They're worthy. We have so much, and they are worthy of help. They're our brethren. They're our brothers and sisters in Christ, and they're trying. While we were there, and again, it's due to the local preacher's work, there were several who were baptized. And then we had one more meeting that night. Before we went back, I was glad to have a little flashlight. It was dark by the time we got there, and finally we met. They were still coming in as I took this picture, but several preachers here that had gathered. And then finally the last day came, and we had a nice meal together with Brother Solomon and Jaba Kumar and Emmanuel and their wives and Dennis. And so it was good to be with them for that last nice meal before we left. Didn't have any bananas. It was a good meal. Well, it's always good to go. It's always great to come back and get on that plane and start back home. But brethren, you're doing well to stay with this work and to continue to help the advancement of the Lord's church in India. India is indeed a land in need of the saving gospel of Christ. 80% worshiping idols. 13% Hindu or Muslim. And right now, just a little over 3% in the broad sense of the word that have the gospel. We need to, God's blessed us. We know that. And someday we're going to stand before Him. And I don't know what all will take place, but I think at least one thing that will happen, that He'll say, "What have you done with that which was mine?" He's given us the talents, the 5 talents, the 2 talents, the 1 talent. And when the master came back, he asked those servants, "What did you do with what I gave you?" And don't you know the Lord's going to ask that of us? And I think it's wonderful that this congregation can say, "You blessed us, and we in turn have tried to bless others in India and other places as well." And may God bless you to continue to do that. We just preach the gospel when we go there. Andrew has, and Matt and others. And it's the same gospel. Nothing changes about it. It's the same Lord. He died for them as well as us. And He's inviting us to come to Him. And it just may be even here tonight, there's someone who's ready to come to Him and to confess their faith in Him and turn from sins and to be buried with Him in baptism. Maybe there's some of us that need to come back to Him. And He said if we'll confess our sins and ask His forgiveness, He'll forgive us. So we do have that opportunity here, Columbia, Graymere's, as well as other places. So if you're subject to the invitation, we would encourage you to accept the Lord's invitation while together we stand and as we sing.
"I must needs go home by the way of the cross. There's no other way but this.